Good morning and happy Friday. I'm Cheryl Walker with the News Gazette. Today is Friday, February 28th, 2025. And we are now continuing with part two. And we will begin with the death notices on A6. Raina Lynn Adams. It is with heavy hearts that we announce the passing of Raina Lynn Adams, 65, of Danville, who fought a courageous battle until she was called home at 8:59 p.m. Monday, February the 17th, 2025. Details regarding services and arrangements will be shared with the coming days. Please keep the family in your thoughts and prayers during this difficult time. John Brady of Clinton, 88, died Tuesday, February 25, 2025 at Carl Foundation Hospital. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday at Kenny Christian Church. Kenny Ernie Harvey Jr. will officiate. A private burial will be in Pleasant Valley Cemetery in Kenny and Calvert Funeral Home, 201 South Center Street, Clinton, is in charge of the arrangements. Scott W. Bubb, 55, of Mattoon, died Thursday, February 20th at 2025 at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Evergreen Cremation Services, 314 Tiffany Court, Champaign. Lee Drexen, 89, of Urbana, formerly of Mattoon, died at 7:54 p.m., February 15th, 2025. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Walker Funeral Service and Chapel, 704 North 4th Street, Champaign. Ralph Gerlditti, 94, of Champaign, died at 4:30 a.m. Thursday, February 27, 2025 at the VA Illini Healthcare System in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Morgan Memorial Home, 1304 Regency Drive, West Savoy. Marilyn Gones of St. Joe, 85, passed away at 1:40 p.m. Wednesday, February 26, 2025 at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 11:30 a.m. Monday, March the 3rd at Freeze Funeral Home, 302 East Grand Avenue, St. Joe. The burial will be in Patterson Cemetery. Visitation will be from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Monday. Nancy Ann Hill, 1938 to 2025, beloved mother to Angela and Rue, passed away peacefully at home on Sunday, February 23rd, 2025. Visitation will be on Wednesday, March the 5th from 9 to 11 a.m. at Jones Funeral Home, Newman, with funeral services at 11 a.m. And the burial will follow at Fairfield Church and Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Arlington United Methodist Church. Todd Jamison, 68, of Potomac, peacefully passed away at 6:50 on Tuesday, February 25, 2025, at his home with his family by his side. A celebration of Todd's life will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. on March the 3rd at Potomac Community Building, with a service beginning at 7 p.m., officiated by Jeb Kennell. In accordance to his wishes, cremation rites will be arranged. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions will be made at St. Jude's Children's Hospital. The family has entrusted Potomac System in honoring Todd's life. Condolences may be shared with the family on this evening in this everlasting memorial page at burlingtonfuneralhome.com. Ann Johnson, 79, died at 12:19 p.m. Saturday, February 22nd, 2025 at Carl Foundation Hospital of Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Walker Funeral Home and 704 North 1st Street, Champaign. Dorothy F. Jones, 98, of Danville, passed this life Tuesday, February 25, 2025 at Paris Health and Rehab Center, Paris, Illinois. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 4th at Robinson Chapel, Catlin. And Chris Lawyer officiating burial will be on the Greenwood Cemetery, Danville. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, March the 4th, prior to the services, the funeral home, online condolences at robinsonchapel.com. C.W. Kinney, 77, of Champaign, formerly of Arthur, passed away Tuesday, February 25th, 2025 at St. Elizabeth's Hospital of Fallon. Funeral services will be on Tuesday, March the 4th at 2 p.m. at Schrader Funeral Home, 430 South Vine Street, Arthur, with visitation starting 1 hour prior. Masonic rites will be performed prior to the funeral. Burial will be in Arthur Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the Prairie Council, Boy Scouts of America, and Illinois Police Association. Kickapoo Division online condolences to the family may be shared at hildegrossschraderfh.com. John Martin died Wednesday, February 26, 2025 at Goldwater Care, Gibson City. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Owens Funeral Home, 101 North Elm Street, Champaign. Terry Redd, 58, of Urbana, died at 4:40 p.m. Monday, February 24, 2025 at Carl Foundation Hospital. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Evergreen Cremation Services at 314 Tiffany Court. Brian Stevens, 72, died Wednesday, February 26, 2025, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Morgan Memorial Home, 1304 Regency Drive, West Savoy. Anna Taylor, 51, died 1:23 a.m. Wednesday, February 26, 2025, at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rutberg Funeral Service and Crematory, 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. The public must get ready and must get real on real ID requirements. Looking for a few hoops to jump through, here's some courtesy of the feds. The federal government's real ID program has been delayed so many times, it's hard to know if the latest May 7th deadline is for real. But Illinois Secretary of State Alex Gilianis insisted it is. So if for those of you who want to fly but don't yet have the special identification card, better think about getting one. But first, what the heck is a real ID? It's a national security identification marked placed on a driver's license that allows the possessor access to air travel on certain facilities like military bases. Not everyone needs one. Those with valid passports or who are under 18 do not need a real ID. Those who do not fly also do not need one. But for those of you who require a real ID, far outnumber those who don't. Gilianis offices reports that only 3.4 million Illinois residents, about 30% of those with their driver's license or state ID, have a real ID. Obviously, there's a lot of work to be done and not a lot of time to do it. Further complicating the problem or securing appointments at a driver's service office or taking the risk of being a walk-in is the sheer number of documents a person must present to get a real ID. An individual needs proof of identity that may include a birth certificate, a U.S. passport, naturalization certificate, or a report of birth abroad. Non-U.S. citizens can provide an employment authorization document, permanent residence card, or foreign passport. Proof of Social Security number. Acceptable documents include Social Security card, a W-2 pay stub, display the full number, proof of Illinois residency through 2 documents showing your full name, such as a utility bill or rental agreement, proof of signature including a cancel check or a current state driver's license or ID. Applicants are well advised to scrutinize the requirements posted online to ensure that they have what they need. Gilianis said his office has interactive online checklists that applicants can use to ensure they have the necessary documents. Members of the public need to realize this program has been an ongoing fiasco and take an organized approach. Initially scheduled to begin in September of 2019, the deadline has been repeatedly pushed back now to May 7th. It would be no surprise that the deadline, too, goes up in smoke, but whatever the future holds, it's best for people to get out in front of it with the necessary documents and an appointment at a driver's service facility to go with it. It's unclear to what extent the Real ID program requirements have penetrated public conscious. Statistics would indicate not much, but whether or not May 7th is the real deadline, it's coming sooner or later. Look at all the distasteful deadlines. Those who meet it will have one fewer problem or concern. Our community's Danville Fisher Theater. Board appeals to public about financial struggles. This story was written by Jennifer Bailey. The historic Fisher Theater in downtown Danville is running a deficit on the average about $11,000 a month. Its board is asking the public to help change that, or additional difficult decisions will have to be made. Vermilion Heritage Foundation Board President Ashton Greer said typically grant funds or donors cover the deficit, but if not, we're just eating it. If the theater doesn't engage the public enough and continually can't pay its bills, it could lead to a change in the operation structure, Greer said. The board has announced a 2025 Fisher Theater Board fundraising series of events throughout this year, and it hopes the public will help the theater by participating. If people are not patronizing the theater, it can't at least break even, Greer said. In a recent appeal letter she sent to the public, she stated, "First, I want to say thank you for supporting the Fisher Theater. Since we reopened our doors on September 21st, 2019, this was a dream of our community for nearly three decades and an incredible gift to Danville, the surrounding areas. Efforts to renovate the building were finally made possible through the generous contribution of Julius Hegler II, who funded the physical renovations of the classic structure, allowing us to open the doors and invite our patrons in to experience the arts inside of this magnificent landmark." Greer said that many people don't know that the theater has a mortgage that it's paying. When the facility was ready to be open to the public for events, the foundation did not and still does not have an endowment of any significant amount of funds to serve as an engine or nest egg for operation. "We operate entirely based upon event revenue, grant funding, and the generosity of donors," Greer said. "Additionally, to get the project across the finish line, our foundation had to secure a $500,000 mortgage to bring the project to completion for opening day." She said when Hegler passed away during renovations, the decision-making person wasn't there anymore, and the cash flow stopped. The project went over budget, and the mortgage was necessary to make sure everything got across the finish line, including the seats, stage, sound equipment, etc. They weren't part of the original budget. Greer and the board said it costs $1,000 a day to keep the theater running, meaning it must make at least $30,000 a month to break even, and current event revenue leads to the average monthly deficit of nearly $11,000. "This is not due to high wages, as we are very lean with staffing, but due to our outstanding mortgage, costly utility bills, building insurance costs, maintenance, and on such large historical structure, etc.," Greer said. "The theater pays one full-time and two part-time staff members. As a group of volunteers," Greer added that the theater doesn't receive any city or government support, as many historic theaters in our community do. She added that one source could be a revenue from the hotel motel tax, which is meant to support organizations that improve the quality of life in the city, a mission she said, and the board strongly believes they fulfill. "People don't realize the value of property and how expensive it is to run the theater," she said. "The building also is on the historic registry, which has requirements for repairs and maintenance. While the theater has a beautiful restored auditorium, lobby, and second floor, and many infrastructures and system improvements, half of its remains unfinished. There are two levels unfinished, above the main lobby and a large basement below the stage that is in its original state. Currently, there are no dressing rooms or bathrooms backstage, which limits the appeal for many touring acts," Greer said. "The mission of our foundation, we believe art is vital to a good life." She wrote into her letter, "Our purpose is to fund and oversee the restoration, maintenance, and operation of this historic Fisher Theater for us all to experience the arts and this local treasure. The many board members and staff who have led the organization through their last 5 years believe in this mission and have carried on despite a multitude of setbacks and challenges such as COVID-19 pandemic, staff turnover, and the ever-increasing cost of supplies, insurance, utilities, to name a few. While the Fisher has pressed forward through these challenges, we have reached a moment in time where we must further engage our patrons, supporters, and biggest fans to help us continue so that we can remain strong for years to come. The hard truth is that the budget deficit we are experiencing makes it impossible for us to hire additional staff. The lack of staff makes it difficult to open more frequently to the community due to the limitation of being human. The board and staff realize that we must strategize to create a more sustainable business model. So we were shifting to emphasize on fundraising, grant seeking, and engaging our community members and donors who are passionate about our mission for support. If we are not successful, the longevity of the theater is in question, and we want to say it clearly. We need your help. The Fisher team is continually pursuing grant opportunities and also rolling out other opportunities to gain support in the months ahead. The 2025 Fisher Theater Board Fundraising Series involves the board of directors hosting quarterly fundraisers at the facility that are specifically chosen to reach a broad audience. These events are intended to provide immersion, engaging art experiences to community while simultaneously generating funds to support operations they include. The royal premiere and parade march on March 29th, calling all princes and princesses to the most royal of events at the historic Fisher Theater. Enter a magical setting with a many royal characters to greet you. Decorate your crown, collect wildflowers from Snow White, get your hair tinseled, get a temporary royal crest tattoo, snap a photograph with your favorite character, get a souvenir cup, enjoy your favorite character with a souvenir cup filled with themed beverage from the cafe and participate in the scavenger hunt for Cinderella's glass slipper. Prince and princesses line up for royal parade across the stage from the guests who admire the then settled in for a showing of Tangled with a lunchbox full of treats. A fake wedding, June 28th. Have you ever wanted to crash a wedding? Now you can. It's encouraged. Dress in your formal attire and sip on a cocktail in the lobby. Find your seat in the auditorium as the most beautiful and elaborate wedding ceremony takes place. Who will be the bride and groom? You'll just have to wait and see. Following the wedding, enjoy delicious food and cake, awkward family toast, dancing with the mother of the bride to the music of a surprise band. Rocky Horror Picture Show, October the 24th through the 25th and the 31st, and November the 1st. Four opportunities to experience the live production. The Polar Bus Express, December the 14th. All aboard. The bus off-site in your coziest pajamas, embark on an adventure to the theater, complete with a golden ticket, jingle bells, and a hot chocolate stop. You won't be disappointed when you reach the North Pole for a showing of Polar Express. We appreciate every time you patronize the Fisher, whether it be for $5 or $100 ticket. Your attendance allows us to keep our doors open, Greer wrote in her letter. We hope you will attend these events and more in support of this incredible community resource. Strong attendance at our events allows us to continue offering a diverse range of programming when attendance is low. It directly impacts our ability to bring in a variety of performances, films, and community events. We need your generosity now more than ever. We are very proud of how far we've come, and we remain optimistic that we can keep the marquee shining with your patronage and support. A Springfield man held in December's fatal shooting. Champaign. This story is written by Jay Wieserman at NewsGazette.com. The Champaign County Sheriff's Office has arrested a suspect in a homicide that occurred in December. With assistance from the U.S. Marshals Service, Jamal Carter was arrested on Thursday in Springfield and taken to Champaign County Jail, where he remains in custody pending judicial proceedings, the Sheriff's Office said. Sheriff's deputies were dispatched into a home in the 1500 block of Dobbins Drive in Champaign Township approximately 8:54 p.m. on December the 10th. After receiving a report of a shooting, Alvin Parker was pronounced dead at the scene. Detective from Sheriff's Office identified Carter, who lives in Springfield, as a person of interest. During their investigation, additionally, a traffic stop conducted by the Springfield Police Department on January 28th turned up evidence linking Carter to Parker's death. Law enforcement officials said the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office later obtained a warrant to arrest Carter for Parker's murder. The investigation is ongoing. The Champaign County's office asked that anyone who has additional information call the Criminal Investigation Division at 217-384-1213. Arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. Alternatively, anonymous tips can be also submitted. Crime Stoppers by calling 217-373-8477. Online at 373trips.com or via P3 Tips mobile app. Crime Stoppers will pay cash rewards of $5,000 for tips that lead to an arrest in any homicide case, $2,500 for tips leading to an arrest in a felony crime involving a firearm, and up to $1,000 for tips leading to the arrest of the person responsible for any crime. Tilton Smiley Joint Bar Grill undergoing rebranding. This story is written by Jennifer Bailey, J. Bailey at NewsGazette.com. Molly's Joint has been known for about the past year and a half for its cannabis consumption lounge, gambling, and bar and grill restaurant. Adjacent to the Parkway Dispensary, now selling local cultivated cannabis, Redemption Bonacles CEO Marshall Lante, as Molly's Bar and Grill restaurant is temporarily down, it's going through a rebranding and they hope to reopen it within about 90 days, he said. Lanti said the cannabis dispensary and lounge are still open with their normal operating hours. It's a strategic update, said, about the restaurant's portion. There still will be food offered in the future. They're exploring all options, Lanti said. They've been wanting to attract more of the public with the restaurant. A new entrance door has been added to the goal directly into the Molly's Bar and Grill. Developer Paul Offert previously has said that the restaurant was slow getting going, but you don't smell cannabis in there. You can't take your grandkids or your mother. You can't smoke or do cannabis there. It's a separate restaurant. They want it to be a venue where people can come and enjoy themselves, whether or not they're involved with the cannabis. They want Molly's Bar and Grill to stand on its own without it necessarily associated with or relying on other businesses for traffic. Lanti obviously previously said, Molly's joint also continues to have events including Glow Bongo and on March 8th, Lifted Yoga on March 16th, a Dueling Pianos event on May 24th. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Harry the Spy, star dies at 39. Michelle Trichberg, a former child star who appeared in 1996 Harry the Spy hit movie and went on to co-star in two buzzy millennia-era TV shows, Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Gossip Girl, has died. She was 39. Police responded to a 911 call shortly after 8 a.m. at a 51-story luxury apartment tower in Manhattan's Hell's Kitchen neighborhood, where four officers found Trichberg unconscious and unresponsive, according to a New York PD statement. Paramedics pronounced her dead at the scene. No foul play was suspected. Trichberg's family objected to an autopsy. New York's Office of the Chief Medical Examiner said Thursday, because there was no evidence of criminality. The medical examiner's office honored the objection, limiting its findings. Such objections are allowed by law. The cause and manner of death are listed as undetermined. The family requests privacy for their loss. Trichberg's representative Gary McIntosh said in a statement Wednesday, Trichberg was 8 when she began playing Nona McAmberry and Nickelodeon, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, from 1994 to 1996, and then starred in the title role in the film's adaptation of Harriet the Spy, an Inspector Gadget opposite of Matthew Broderick. Michelle comes off as a genuine because she really is a genuine kid. Everyone can identify with her, Debbie Beast, president of Nickelodeon Movies, said in 1996. In 2000, Trichberg joined the cast of Buffy the Vampire playing down Dawn Summers, the younger sister of the title character, played by Sarah Mitchell-Gellar, between 2000 and 2003. Trichberg thanked Gellar for speaking on against Joss Whedon in 2021 following abuse allegations made against the Buffy showrunner. I am brave enough now as a 35-year-old woman to repost this, she wrote on her social media, and alluded to his not appropriate behavior she experienced as a teenage actor. In 2001, she received a Daytime Emmy nomination for hosting Discovering Truth or Scary. Trichberg went on to recurring roles on 6 Feet Under, Weeds, and Gossip Girl, where she played the gang scheming nemesis of Gina Sparks. For her fan favorite role, she nominated as a TV villain at the Teen Choice Award in 2012. It's definitely a lot more fun than playing the good girl, she told Steven. 17 in 2009. I love the reaction you get. I never understand why some actors don't want to play the villain or evil characters. Demo prep. Fencing is now surrounding the former Vermilion County Courthouse Annex and Breeze Tower for demolition, according to Danville Public Works Director Dave Rue. The contractor has set up this job site and their storage area in the north and is currently working on an abatement of asbestos-containing materials with both buildings. This will be done inside of both buildings and be likely take some time to accomplish, according to the preliminary schedule provided by the contractor. They intended to begin demolition of the courthouse annex mid to late March. Boy swimming and diving state meet. Champaign Central is bringing larger group to state this winter. We have a really special bunch. The Champaign Central boys swimming and diving team won its 6th consecutive section title last Saturday. That was no surprise to anyone considering the half decade plus of dominance the Maroons have shown throughout the area. We got a good thing going. It's a credit to the kids, Central coach Dave Young said. We have 33 kids on the team this year. When you have that many, which is a large team, everybody's pushing each other and getting better. It's kind of autopilot. I'm sure that I have much to do with it. It's just the kids pushing themselves to get better. What was extra impressive was the way in which they did it. First, you have junior Garen Barker Returning News Gazette Swimmer of the Year, he won 4 gold medals at sectionals for the second year in a row, but the kicker was also set Urbana Indoor Aquatics pool record in all 4 events. Barker won the 100-yard butterfly in 48.84 seconds and the 100 backstroke in 50.72. He was also on the record setting of the state qualifying 200 medley relay, 1 minute 36.47 seconds, and 400 freestyle relay, 3 minutes 14 0.60 seconds. It's amazing, Barker said. It feels good to keep the streak alive at Central of winning sectionals after year after year. We have everything we have for the Twin City and sectionals. Those are the meets that matter. We're just focused on the moment and working hard. Joining Barker on both of these relays were senior Josh Lee and junior Jonathan Freeberry, who also qualified for Friday's IHSA state meet at FMC Nanatorium in Westmount. Individual events. Lee finished second in the 200 individual medley in 1 minute 55 seconds, 55.17 seconds. He's been to the state meet before on relay teams, but this is the first time he's going for a solo event, which makes it even more special. Cessna Park heading back to Elite Eight as the last area team standing. For the second year in a row, Cessna Park is the last area girls basketball team standing, and once again, the Timberwolves will have a shot at making the state finals. Cessna Park can choose to find ways to win when it matters most. The Timberwolves' last display of grit came on Thursday night, 49-39 Class 1A Midland Sectional Championship win over Roken Benson. This is unfamiliar territory. I've never been a part of something like this as a player. As a coach, Cessna Park's coach, Anthony Vikitas, said, it goes back to the girls. It's just a special group that knows how to get it done. It's starting to become a habit for the Timberwolves, 29-4, to play in the game of this magnitude and not just for basketball. The volleyball team made its second straight trip to state this past fall, taking home a third-place trophy after coming away with fourth in 2023. Holston, Molina again, host state title aspirations. Chloe Holston and Phoenix Molina know the road up to state and each other well. The area wrestling standouts faced each other in IHSA state championships match last season at 235-pound Holston from Prairie Central top, Molina from Unity to win a state championship. And the duo is back in the mix for the class top prize this season. I think that kind of becoming where I am in some of the things I've done in my career. I don't really have much nerves going into the tournament, Holston said. It's just more wrestling. Holston will test her undefeated 23 mark in a first-round match against Romanville nemesis Villagrena on Friday, while Molina's third state finals appearance will start against Freedman's Jasmine Ocampo. After you do a tournament so many times, it kind of takes the nervousness edge off, Molina said. I feel like I can focus a lot more. Holston beat Molina in a regional match at the Potomac and a sectional bout at Highland en route to the state finals, which will take place on Friday and Saturday at Grossman Motors Arena in Bloomington. Those wins mark the latest high-profile meeting between the pair. All these girls have begin wrestling against. They're all good, and I just happen to meet a lot of the same girls in the finals of my matches, Holston said. Outside of wrestling, I respect them as a person and an athlete, but on the mat, I kind of have to take it to them. Holston, now a senior, was drawn to wrestling because of family ties. Her cousins and brothers always wrestling when she was growing up, giving her a chance to take a lot of the tournaments. Being able to watch it kind of just started the interest in it, and then I started wrestling at a young age, Holston said. I love it from there. She has become a very key leader for the Hawks Green Girls program during the last 4 seasons, especially this season with Coach Scholar Zeeler saw the side of room double from 4 participants to 7 in 8 seasons. She's a good kid, a really good leader, and she's very good at bringing people together. I am Cheryl Walker with the News Gazette. Today is Friday, February 28, 2025. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a great Friday.